Welcome to the Fundraising Leadership Podcast, where we engage in lively and thoughtful conversations with professionals in and out of the nonprofit world. I'm David Langiuli, and I'm joined with my partner, Michelle Malloy Dillon. Hey, Michelle.
Hey, David. Good to be with you today.
Yeah, it's been a while. Good to be with you. And we have a lovely guest, Michelle. Her name is Anita Novak, hailing from Canada, if I'm not mistaken, Anita?
Montreal.
Montreal, right. And Anita is a PhD and also a certified coach and founder of Purposeful Empathy by Design, a boutique advisory firm that helps leaders and organizations create cultures of empathy. She also advises family offices and foundations to translate their philanthropic goals into social impact. And just a little spoiler, Anita was a fundraiser in the nonprofit world for many years. So we're really happy to have her here on the podcast. She's passionate about mentoring the next generation of change makers and teaches leadership, ethics in management, and social entrepreneurship and innovation at McGill University, where she was named Professor of the Year in 2014 and 2019 by the Management Undergraduate Society. Anita is a multiple TEDx and keynote speaker and author of Purposeful Empathy, Tapping Our Hidden Superpower for Personal, Organizational, and Social Change. She also hosts a podcast and a YouTube series by the same name. We're going to give links in the show notes to all of her resources. And she's dedicated to amplifying the voices of people from around the globe who understand the world needs more empathy and who want to do something about it. Well, that was a mouthful. Welcome, Anita.
Thank you so much, David. And hello, Michelle. I'm so delighted to be part of this podcast and conversation. And you mentioned that I spent 7 years as a professional fundraiser. I think once you've been a fundraiser, you're always a fundraiser because I'm invited all the time to help with bake sales and on boards and all sorts of things. So I certainly have empathy for everyone who's on the front lines of philanthropy.
Well, through that. So we thought we would talking with you before we got on the podcast and you know, we wanted to share a little bit about your forthcoming book and, you know, how empathy applies to the realm of leadership. And you shared with us that there are some significant challenges that leaders are facing right now. So we want to hear about them. We're excited because we're like, oh, yeah, we hear about this stuff all the time and how we could apply empathy to these challenges that folks are facing.
Yeah, I think there are many issues facing workplaces and leaders and organizations today. But I think the five that really catch my attention and where I think empathy plays a role begins with just like at a high level, our mental health, stress, and kind of high rates of burnout, right? So I discovered recently that Americans are the most overworked developed nation in the world, and productivity per employee has increased 434% since 1950. Okay, so just take that in for a second.
That is a mind-boggling number.
Right? Professionals are just flat out exhausted from the crushing workload and digital overload, especially that they endured during the pandemic. We've heard all about that. And it's taken a grave toll on everyone's mental health, right? So in the last couple of years, the rate of anxiety and depression has now sort of one third of American adults are reporting issues around anxiety and depression, and burnout across all professions are at an all-time high, with women and racialized people being disproportionately affected. So we need empathic workplaces to just address the baseline mental health needs of people who are coming in to do the work. So that's the first one. The second one includes a bunch of buzzwords. So we've got the great resignation, quiet quitting, and most recently, bare minimum Mondays. I don't know if you've heard about this. So we know that during the during the pandemic, there were tons of epiphanies about family time, what it meant to do remote work or commuting, passion projects, mortality, one's life purpose, right? All of that played into this idea of like, how am I spending my time? How am I spending my energy? And a lot of people decided I'm not going to do this anymore, right? So we had this quiet quitting, that was the great resignation moment. But in the meantime, there has also been a couple of trends. So quiet quitting is basically the younger generation saying, I'm committed to doing my job, but I'm also going to set boundaries to protect my personal and family time. And the newest trend, which was actually started by a TikToker, is called Bare Minimum Mondays, where it's like, I want to practice self-care and beat the Sunday scaries, as they're known, by easing into the week. All right. And with all of that as context, we know that the war for talent is real. Deloitte actually had a study that 6 out of 10 CEOs believe that attracting talent would be among their company's biggest challenges. So I think, you know, employees are being selective about the kind of organizations they want to work for. And I think empathic leadership, empathic organizations is, again, crucial. Third one. Am I going too fast? Did you want to ask a follow-up or should I go for it? Yeah.
Okay. Oh, hey, we could spend lots of time on, let's just get them out there and we'll see which ones we're going to toss around.
Alive for you. Okay. Third, no surprise, psychological safety, right? So psychological safety is this belief that no one should feel humiliated or be punished for speaking up with ideas or concerns or questions or even mistakes. When you have a psychologically safe workplace, you can actually show up as your authentic self, right? And you feel a sense of belonging. So that's important. But then added to that, you've got social media echo chambers and political polarization that is deepening the divides, right? This othering has seeped into workplaces, creating hostile us versus them environments across a bunch of different divides. And this is really burdening businesses with additional costs related to mediating internal conflicts. There's a bunch of leadership turnover, employee attrition, expensive recruitment activities. So organizations really must, it's incumbent upon them for their bottom line to actually build bridges across difference. And that again requires empathy. The fourth one is diversity, equity, and inclusion, all the DEI. It's become a top priority for workers, and leaders can't pay lip service to advancing racial equity. So businesses and other organizations are being called upon to leverage all of their assets, all of their power and influence to contribute to systemic change. And strategies that foster inclusion and justice are needed more than ever. And there's like a big backlash that's actually growing in this space towards diversity training. And so I think other forms of empathy-based interventions are really helpful. And last but not least is Gen Z. And these are the young people that I have in my class that I've been teaching for the last decade. And even over the decade that I've been teaching, I have seen a real shift in sort of their set of values and ethos and their manner in which they work. So over the next decade, hundreds of millions of Gen Zers are going to join the workforce, the most diverse generation ever known. And they're expected to transform the workplace by bringing different values and expectations and priorities. They're allergic to power over structures. They want to work power with, and they want to work for organizations that value collaboration, sustainability, authenticity, and EDI. So those to me are the five big mega trends that I believe are having a big influence on our workplace and why empathic leadership and empathic organizations is so important.
Just hearing you go through that list has me sort of feeling like, oh my God, it's so true. You know, I mean, David right. and I sense this with our coaching clients and we see it in the world in our own ways as well. It makes a lot of sense that it makes me want to ask you, you know, what are some of the strategies that you would recommend to promote more of an empathetic culture in workplaces to sort of combat all of these things that are happening?
Well, I'll tell a little story about an organization that I did work with. I got hired by a med school overseas to help them develop curriculum for their physicians, their graduating physicians, how to become more empathic doctors. And with a PhD in pedagogy design, I said, okay, that sounds great. I'm happy to take on that mandate. Met with the leadership team and discovered that they see health, healthcare in a larger frame than just sort of like, you know, surgery or addressing somebody who has an illness and trying to get them better using medicine or other forms of intervention. They view health from the point of view of health and well-being, like planetary health, along the lines of the SDGs. Let's try to create a society that is thriving as opposed to sickly. And I, you know, we had this great conversation and I said to them, I feel like now that I know your organization better, you care deeply about this. Why would you put empathy? Why would you inject empathy so far downstream in your curriculum? Why doesn't it start all the way from your leadership team and let it cascade across the organization? They bought into this and they invited me to do a few half-day sessions with them, which included a design session on how to create a more empathic culture. So with, you know, there were 25 people participating in small little groups. We had brainstorming session to address three different questions. What would it look like to come to work where you feel self-empathy, where you feel like you are treating yourself kindly, right? What would be some of the policies and practices that that organization would have in place that every employee would come to work and feel like they're taking good care of themselves? And they had the right to. The second question was, what would empathic relationships look like? What kind of policies and procedures would be in place for the organization or the culture itself that would allow empathy across relationships, whether it's with peers, whether it's with direct reports, whether it's with the leadership team? What would that look like? And the last question was, in an ideal world, how would you feel that the organization is being empathic to you? What would that look like? So for that one, three out of the five breakout groups brainstormed and came up with the same answer. So we spent some time looking at that. And that was that the med school didn't actually have a staff room for faculty and staff to come together, sit together, put your feet up, you know, read a magazine, play a chess game, read a book, do a yoga, whatever. And the higher up leadership team really heard that as a pain point. And between that session and the next one, which was maybe about 5 days, it included a weekend, they emptied out a big storeroom that had photocopying machines and boxes and a whole bunch of supplies. They put a coat of paint, they put some sofas in it, some beautiful, you know, lamps and chessboards and board games, a big screen TV for anybody who wanted to watch a sporting event. And they did a big reveal. And I was with them when 25 people went up to this staff lounge and people were crying. I watched people falling over themselves with delight that the organization really heard them. So to answer your question, I don't think it requires a mastermind group to figure it out. What I think it takes is asking people who work in the organization what would matter to them and being responsive to that.
I like what you're saying there. And I do think part of that example that you just shared is in the excerpt of the book we're going to be sharing with the audience. They can access it from the podcast, actually. So that'll be there, you know, where you tell that story. But what I heard in what you said was that listening is a key driver of empathy. And from a leadership context, we know, Michelle and I know, and we actually train leaders on how to listen. It's surprising that you would hear us say that. And so I'd love to hear, because I know also in that excerpt, you talk about listening as an important component, almost a precursor to empathy. You know, we've heard the saying empathic listening. I don't even think, I mean, Michelle and I know what that means, but let's just like put it out there for the audience. Like, what does that mean?
Yeah. So I think we think we're all good listeners, but we are not. We are busy listening to respond instead of listening to understand. And if anybody is triggered emotionally in a personal relationship or in a work context, we are not listening to understand. And I have trained with the Center for Developing a Culture of Empathy out in California to become a trained facilitator of empathy circles. And so I've participated in many and I've facilitated several. where you have people, let's say 5 or 6 people on a call, and we start with a random conversation about a topic like, did you watch the Oscars yesterday night? And people will pair as the speaker and as the listener. And the speaker will speak for 4 minutes, but not 4 minutes in one straight monologue. They'll speak in little sound bites, and the listener will reflect back the essence of what they heard. So you're not busy trying to memorize what the person said. You're trying to get the essence of it. And it goes back and forth and back and forth. And through that practice, if you are the listener reflecting back what you're hearing, you realize how much cognitive power is involved in just 4 minutes. And you do that for an hour, an hour and a half. Even if you're not the actual person doing the reflecting, you're one of the members in the circle that's just listening, you're realizing what salient points somebody else picked up that you would not have thought was important in reflecting back, and you just hear different words. And it's just a powerful tool to learn how to be an empathic listener. And I think that when we are busy as leaders, you know, with emails coming through and KPIs and demands on our time, that we are in a higher state of stress in our lives. And as a result, our brains can't be in a state of anxiety or stress and in a state of empathy simultaneously. It's not possible. So what you need to do is you need to actually become self-aware, dip into self-awareness, and then be able to extend active listening. So it's something to be practiced. It is not something that is easy.
Yeah. And a key word in the title of your book is purposeful, right? And, I make up that you were very purposeful in putting that word in there. What's important about being purposeful in our listening and our empathy?
Well, the backstory is that I didn't come to empathy because I thought it was amazing from the get-go. I came at it very, very honestly as a result of doing interviews for my PhD. So I was interested in understanding why social entrepreneurs do the work that they do, right? And entrepreneurs, we all know what entrepreneurs are, right? Social entrepreneurs are people who use the same skills and talents as entrepreneurs, but actually use them towards solving social and environmental problems, right? So they're the founders of nonprofit organizations and social enterprises. And I interviewed dozens and dozens of them for my PhD because I wanted to understand what they had in common, to see, to sort of inform my thinking about what motivated them, because I was interested in developing pedagogy and curriculum that would inspire the next generation of changemakers. And across the board, without exception, what I kept hearing from everybody about why they do the work that they do, whether it was in poverty alleviation, whether it was in healthcare, homelessness, I was agnostic to what issue they were working on. All of them felt a need to act on the empathy that they felt for the people who were suffering, people who were disenfranchised, people who were marginalized. And that's when I discovered, oh, so what is this thing about this empathy and activating empathy? So that's when I started my deep dive, 10 years later, on the power of empathy. And so I used to call it empathic action, so acting on empathy. And now the frame is purposeful empathy, because it's deciding to be empathic on purpose, because there's two types of empathy. The first is affective empathy. So that's, if we listen to a horror movie without the volume on, our affect is not triggered, right? We're less scared. You all know the experience, right? If we see a child who's opening a birthday gift, who's like delighting in whatever's inside the box, we are feeling sympathetic joy. We're feeling excited by that stimulus, watching that child. So affective empathy, being in emotional resonance with someone, it happens to us naturally, and it involves our heart. Cognitive empathy, on the other hand, is actually us deciding to take the perspective of someone else, to imagine what they're experiencing. And so I think cognitive empathy is the more powerful of the two, because we have agency over it. So I put an emphasis on purposeful empathy because I think we need to have purposefully empathic leaders, social policies, workplaces, classrooms, and relationships.
Well, you touched on the first five issues at the top of the podcast, you touched on, you know, facing leaders and organizations now, and we see all of those, and especially as those organizations get larger. So we work with large universities and some hospital organizations, like you mentioned, and these are very large, even though they are, you know, nonprofit. They actually make an economic profit, but maybe they're not paying tax on that. But they have a social purpose to educate the young, to care for the sick. And what I've noticed is as these organizations get larger, you talk about the KPIs and and the technology, and there's a loss of humanity, if I could say it that way. And I really think that you're hitting on something here where it's like listening. Yes, we all know how to listen. We all have the capacity to be empathic, but sometimes we just need to practice, and we need to be reminded that we have this capacity, and do it purposefully, because it will create better outcomes for the organization. So I'd love to hear why folks in the audience who lead some of these organizations should get your book and learn more about this. Like, what will they gain from, you know, sharpening the blade of empathy, if we could use that as a metaphor?
Well, I think this is a moment in human history where it's an all hands on deck moment. I think that between our personal lives, where we're seeing sort of a lot of signs pointing to a mental health crisis, especially with the younger generation. You know, it used to be that the onset of depression started at 30 years old, and now it's at 14. Right. So I think so there's reason to, within your own family context, within your own relationships, to lean into more empathy, because it improves the quality of the relationships and helps us flourish as human beings. You know, there's research that shows people who have studied our evolution say that about 40,000 years ago, Homo sapiens were walking the planet with four or five other large-brained species at the time, but we are the only species that survived. And these scientists have asked themselves, well, why did we survive? And the research that they discovered is that, so the whites of our eyes are larger than any other mammal on the planet. And that's so that we could read each other's eyes. We lost a lot of our facial hair, and our testosterone dropped, all relative to these other creatures. And they surmised that we needed to read each other's facial expressions very well to collaborate. It's part of who we are. We survived and thrived as a species because of our capacity to empathize and work together. And we know what it's like. You know, you're at a meeting with somebody and somebody rolls their eyes, or you just give a look and you already know what they're saying, right? We all have that experience. So it's part of our nature, and it's also part of our nature to feel a sense and want a sense of belonging. And we are living in a culture. And through the pandemic is one thing, but even before the pandemic, we have the highest rates of single family dwelling, like single persons living alone. So we're living in alienated across generations. We don't know our neighbors. And there's something to be said about just relationships improving by devoting more attention to empathy. Then at the organizational level, there's everything that I've just mentioned, and I didn't mention technology at all, but, you know, technology is taking greater and greater space. We've got AI that's coming around with highly developed empathic capacities. You know, we're eventually going to get to a place where the expectation is that medical doctors will be able to give results, test results, using AI chatbots, right? I mean, that interface is coming. So So there's all of the things I mentioned earlier, and then there's the whole idea of, you know, how technology may change things too. Mm-hmm. I think that we need more empathic workplaces because that's where we spend the vast majority of our time. And then, of course, we need a more empathic world. I think about climate change. I think about wealth inequality. I think about, you know, right now, it used to be, I used to quote that the International Labor Organization estimates that there are 27 million modern day slaves, 27 million. And that is three times the number of men, women who were exploited over the 400-year African slave trade. But now they estimate post-COVID, they estimate 50 million modern day slaves. So there's that, and there's 1 billion people who have no access to safe drinking water, 1 billion people who practice open defecation. There's just an enormous amount of social, you know, social ills that require our attention. So I think, you know, at all concentric circles out, we need more empathy in the world. And in our lives, we benefit. The last thing I'll say about that is there are neuroscientists that have studied our brains when we're in an empathic embrace with someone. And it's the same pleasure and reward centers that light up as when we're eating a delicious piece of chocolate cake after we've meditated, while we're on psychedelics. So it actually feels good to us, and we benefit in our bodies when we are in emotional resonance with others. So there's just a bunch of reasons. And I know personally, I can share this anecdote. I remember about 10 years ago when I was learning about the neuroscience of empathy, and there's this idea of what's called brain plasticity or neural plasticity, that we can actually change the neural connections in our brain by thinking more empathic thoughts or becoming more empathic by practicing empathy, behaving differently. So I started doing a bunch of experiments around that time, including like random acts of kindness. I was doing pay it forward at a coffee shop. And one day I was in the long lineup at a FedEx counter. It was during the holiday season in December. I must have waited over 30 minutes, and this is before we had mobile phones to distract us. And I got up to the counter and I was just like, oh, okay, you know. And the woman who greeted me was rude. I mean, like unnervingly rude, unnecessarily rude, nasty rude. And I had this like immediately physical reflex to say, whoa, hold on a second, like back off. And I took a second just to say, okay, is this a moment where I could practice empathy? And I looked at her and I said, are you okay? And she took a minute, like a little nanosecond, to sort of decipher whether I was being sarcastic or earnest. And she said, no. And she burst into tears and she says, I've been working double shifts for 2 weeks. My son's at home with a fever. I think I'm getting sick. It's 3 p.m. I haven't had a lunch break. I'm just flat out exhausted. And I reached across. We held hands on the FedEx counter. She was crying. And after a couple of minutes, I went to get her a mint tea from the food court. I came back and she sent my package off with like efficiency and grace. I don't know her name, but I'll never forget that experience, that idea that empathy was just available if we just had to flip on the switch. And so I think it's important to remember in our busy lives that it's available to us and that we benefit when we practice empathy.
Yeah, you're reminding me of a sign that's actually at our elementary school across the street right now, right in front. It says, kindness, a kind act is never wasted. Mm-hmm. Right. And it's that ability to reach each other human to human. And the purposeful part of that story that I hear for you is really allowing ourselves to take a pause if something is not feeling right, like we're just about to react in a negative way, and taking a pause to be curious. Mm-hmm. What's a way to connect?
Yeah. And it also points to your intuition, and this is part of the listening training that we do with leaders, is listening. You had clearly, you were triggered in a moment. So you have advanced training. So you know, but you had an intuition that something was off with this person, and you have enough training to pause and choose a different response. So I know we got on before the podcast that you were going to give the audience something that they could try if they want to become more skillful as you are.
Mm-hmm. So let's call it the path to purposeful empathy, right? So okay. I'll share an anecdote. So imagine you are a manager and you're sitting at your desk at the office and you've just finished an email and you feel a stress kind of bubbling up, whether it was, you know, somebody who's disappointed or you have to work, you know, on the weekend for a report or something. You're frustrated. You're all triggered yourself. Okay. And a direct report comes into your office and says, do you have a minute? And you say, yeah, sure. Come on in. So they sit down and they say, listen, I have to take a week off because X, Y, or Z, right? Could be I've had a miscarriage. Could be I found out my whatever. Okay. Something important that requires empathy in that moment. Well, if you are triggered yourself, you will not be able to be empathic, right? I just talked about the brain not being able to do that. So the first step of this path, which is a 6-step path, is self-awareness. So we do not spend enough time in our culture actually paying attention to how our bodies feel and the cues it is sending us. So we have to be self-aware that we are feeling stressed and that we have the expectation is that we have to shift into another gear to be more empathic. And one of the easiest ways to do that is through the breath. Taking 2 or 3 deep breaths on purpose. Nobody needs to know that it's a big breath. You can do this kind of quietly, but just intentionally breathing it all the way down to your belly will change how your body feels. Okay. And it'll change the stress hormones, the signals in your brain. Then the second step is self-regulation, is actually making a decision to downgrade. Okay, my body's a little bit calmer. I'm going to calm my mind. And this happens really quickly, right? You don't have 10 minutes to do this, but you are making the decision, right? So it's kind of, let's use the example at the FedEx. I was self-aware that I was triggered, but I decided that I was not going to live with that feeling. I decided to reach to her. And that's where the bridge crossing takes place. So the third step is you are now intentionally making the decision purposefully to engage in empathy. All right. So you are crossing that bridge saying, I'm present. You don't say it out loud. I'm present for you now. But in your head, it's like, I am going to be present for you and hold the space. Then as the person is sharing, and you are in active listening, the fourth step is perspective taking. So you are imagining how that person is experiencing their life and you are holding space for that. And that could take the form of just being quiet. We are not comfortable often with just quiet. Sometimes people are thinking about what they want to say next or they're just feeling the feeling. And if you come at them right away, it kind of sets them off. So just could be a matter of just staying quiet or could mean a matter of sort of tell me how that feels or asking questions from a place of curiosity, right? So all those four steps are involved with the person in your office. And then it's a matter of you deciding what empathic action you might want to take. Now you may decide, can you give me a few minutes to think about what this means? You know, can I get back to you? Because you, for example, if this person needs a week off and you've got a big pressing deadline for a project to advance forward, you might be thinking, oh my God, what are the implications? What does that mean for my team? You don't want to deal with that in that conversation, right? So the empathic action happens after the person feels really heard and you've provided that empathy. And then finally, the sixth step is self-empathy. It's the idea that you need to fill your own bucket up. So for example, I am a woman who's had a couple of miscarriages. If a woman came into my office and said, I need time off for a miscarriage, I'd not only be able to empathize, but it would also remind me of my own lived experience. And so there are lots of things that people might share that might arouse your, you know, things for you. So self-empathy is really important because you don't want to be in a state of compassion fatigue or empathy fatigue where you're constantly giving away your energy all the time without actually replenishing your own batteries, recharging your own batteries. And so that might mean taking a walk in nature. That might mean doing a 5-minute guided meditation, go to YouTube. That might mean journaling. There's a lot of different ways you can practice self-empathy, but that's the entire process. And this comes with practice, but the first set of steps are the most important, the self-awareness and the self-regulation. And I think our society in general, trigger happy on Twitter, we've lost touch with that.
Yeah. And the power of breath, take a deep breath and that can be the entry to all of this. Yeah.
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 Beautiful. Well, Anita, it's been lovely. To have you on the podcast. Empathy and compassion are contexts that we share quite frequently in our work. So it touches our heart that you were willing to come on the podcast and share what the good work you're up to in the world. And the book Purposeful Empathy is going to be available, I know, in early April. We are actually going to link to it from your the excerpt that you shared with us and the podcast so that folks can pre-order and get on board. And of course, there'll be a link to your website there where they, if they want to bring you into the organization, they can reach out to you and help create more empathic organizations.
Thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure, David and Michelle.
Thank you. Michelle, anything else to add?
No, this has been such a wonderful conversation. Everything that you said, David. And yeah, here's to more empathy in the world.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, thanks again, Anita. This podcast is brought to you by Fundraising Leadership. We provide unique coaching and training programs to grow nonprofit leaders. Please subscribe if you haven't already done so. You can find us wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you're enjoying the show, you can help us continue to bring thoughtful content and authors like Anita to you with a one-time contribution. This supports our production costs and keeps the show ad-free. And if you, we'll put a link in the show notes. And if you make a contribution, you'll receive one or more of our highly acclaimed online courses. Now, go put it into practice.